Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and today we are joined by someone I admire a lot in the industry. Once again, Greg Wyshynski, senior NHL writer at ESPN. Thanks so much, Greg, for taking the time and doing this. And we were talking off camera, and I thought it'd maybe be the perfect time to ask someone as plugged in as you is just what's happening in Arizona? What are you hearing? What do you think will happen there with potentially being moved or even staying?
Well, it's a fluid situation, we should say that. But I mean, it's clear that the NHL hasn't necessarily bought into the new plan that the Coyotes had to win a land auction this summer and then try to build this massive multi-purpose facility that included an arena outside of Phoenix. It would have meant staying in Mullet Arena for at least the next few seasons, all the way to 2027. And it just seems like after the Tempe vote failed, that the NHL kind of maybe soured a bit on the process, let's call it. So again, it's fluid, it's not set in stone, but it's clear there's momentum moving towards the team playing in Salt Lake City as early as next season. An announcement could come as late as or as early as the end of this regular season. And it would be a multi-billion dollar transaction between the NHL paying money to acquire the Coyotes, then reselling it to Ryan Smith, the Utah Jazz owner. It's a pretty complicated matter. And but I mean, again, like as we reported this week, myself and Emily Kaplan, there's just a lot of sources all pointing to the same thing, which is that it looks like a likelihood right now that the Coyotes will be in Salt Lake City.
And if that is the case, I'm sure the Coyotes have been in the minds of NHL fans for over a decade now. What do you think went wrong in Arizona, just in terms of obviously there's a bunch of different arenas, but just how you see it over the like how the NHL maybe screwed this up in many ways?
I mean, the original sin for this franchise was moving to Glendale, and it was a problem, one, because they moved away from where their fans are, so it had impacted their attendance. The fact that the team had terrible luck in the draft lottery, for example, through many years of losing, didn't help either. I mean, imagine where this team would be if Auston Matthews was playing for his hometown team, right? But the Glendale thing not only impacted their ability to grow as a franchise, but then also led to the battles between the Glendale City Council and the team itself, which then led to late payments, which then led to financial uncertainty, which then kind of poisoned the well for them in what was essentially going to be the death knell for the franchise, it looks like, which is losing that vote to build the arena in Tempe, where the public re revolted against the Coyotes, one, because the unions were against the deal too, because nobody trusted that the Coyotes could actually like do the pro fulfill their promises that they were making financially, and that all tracks back to all the stuff that happened in Glendale.
With there's been expansion has been still talked about, maybe Atlanta, Houston, other places, Salt Lake City, of course, too, if they don't get. Where do you stand in terms of your own opinions of how many teams are too many teams in the NHL? Is it you just go until 40 or 50? Where do you stand on that?
It's never too many teams as long as you expand the damn playoffs like I want them to. The funny thing about expansion is that there's all this concern about like the league getting watered down, but what's the end result of the league getting watered down? You have guys hitting 70 goals, you have players hitting 100 assists, you have this incredible boom in the game offensively, which I think tracks directly back to subtle rule changes over time, subtle changes to the rosters over time, where we got out of fighting and now have four lines of skill. But also the watering down of rosters because of expansion happening twice. And so if the end result of going to like say 36 teams or 34 teams is that we get more offense and more people paying attention to Wayne Gretzky records being broken, like I'm all for it as long as the product on the ice doesn't suffer. And right now it isn't because the game has never been more entertaining. I don't know what the correct number of teams are outside of it being even between the East and the West, which obviously, if they do two more teams, it won't be in a sufficient way, which would suck. But again, there are so many markets that want to be a part of the NHL right now, be it Salt Lake, be it Houston, be it Atlanta, where you have two different team, ownership groups vying for the same thing, that it's going to be impossible for them to give up the expansion money that that's on the table right now.
with that, and you alluded to guys getting maybe 70 goals like Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid, breaking records, Nathan MacKinnon. How exciting has this been for you as, you know, someone in the league, but also do you think, like, is this maybe the best or one of the best eras of the NHL and hockey that we've ever seen?
Yeah, easily. Like it's easily one of the more entertaining ones at the very least. I think the fact that you have all these records that are being threatened is a great thing. You know, especially when you think about the fact that like for a casual fan, you know, there are very few things that resonate. Wayne Gretzky's name still resonates, right? So if you see MacKinnon having a home point streak that threatens a Gretzky record, or Ovechkin continuing to assault the all-time goals record. Like the casual fans understand what that means. It's been really exciting. It's been fantastic, and it's allowed the NHL to do something that they've been trying to do for the entirety of my adult life, which is put the onus on the players rather than the teams. Tune in to watch Connor McDavid, not the Edmonton Oilers. Tune in to watch Austin Matthews, not the Toronto Maple Leafs. And you know, through offensive achievement. I think that we've gotten to a point where you do have a number of players that are now considered to be must watch. Like no one is sitting through a Blackhawks game this season were it not for Connor Bedard, right?
No.
So you have a lot of those things going on, and I think it's all you know, led to the NHL being in a really good place.
With that and the influx of talent and maybe even the more teams in the league, as you mentioned, it feels as though this playoffs might be one of the most open races ever, with maybe 10, 12 teams that could legitimately win the cup. In your mind, I know you've written about a couple teams, but who do you see as the favorites heading into the playoffs?
Dallas and Carolina, I think if we were going to pick one from each conference, which is a bit chalky, but that's fine. Like Dallas is an extraordinarily deep team this year. They were a bridesmaid last year. They've gotten the best goaltending from Jake Oettinger that they've gotten all season leading into the playoffs, which I think makes them really dangerous. The fact that you have guys like Wyatt Johnston, you know, joining the likes of you know, Pavelski and all the other guys that you expect to score makes them even more dangerous. So they're a really good deep team that knows how to defend well too, which is a big thing in the playoffs. And then the other one's Carolina in the sense that like, you know, they've needed to find a way to score that big goal in a big spot in the playoffs through the entirety of Rod Brind'Amour's time there. And so the idea that they have a point per game player in the playoffs and Jake Guentzel that's got a kid and well, kid, I don't even know how old he is now. And he's a kid to me.
Yeah.
Evgeny Kuznetsov that has shown in the past that he can be a great playoff performer. You know, it seems like if they're ever going to get over the hump, it's going to be now. And so I'm really excited to see what Carolina ends up doing in the playoffs.
And with that, with Carolina, you know, their another issue for them has maybe been their goaltending and who is their goalie. And the question I have for you is, in a cap world and in a seems as though goaltending has never been more voodoo than it is right now. How much do you think teams should prioritize goaltending going forward and right now? Just is it a tandem league now, outside of maybe two or three guys? Like, where, if you were the GM of Carolina, what would you do? Would you big game hunt? Would you just throw a bunch of goalies at?
If it doesn't work, then you big game hunt for sure. I mean, they've been in on guys that could have been the solution to their goaltending problems in the past. But I think it as much when the Golden Knights won last year, there was a number of teams that tried to emulate it. The LA Kings were candid about the fact that they were going to try to throw Cam Talbot and Phoenix Copley and David Riddick in a big, you know, bowl and hope that something, you know, like Adin Hill came out of it. The Devils were another team that, you know, went in that direction too of trying to do it by committee. And I think in the Devils' case, they saw the error of their ways and they're clearly going to go make a trade for either, you know, Jacob Markstrom or Juuse Saros this offseason, I think, to remedy that situation. So, you know, as many teams as try to like do goaltending on the cheap, they all seem to come back to the same realization, which is that you can't, and that you need that guy to really carry your team. You know, not everybody's going to have Vasilevskiy, but you may have a good Darcy Kemper for a few playoff rounds, and that's what sometimes all you need.
With that, you wrote a really great piece on the Rangers and just maybe how they befuddled so many people and that followed the league and the season. And you talked about how they're pretty pedestrian 5-on-5, but their special teams and goaltending. About the way, how, when you see that, Greg, do you think this is gonna be a one-hit wonder? They'll lose in the first round again, or how far can elite special teams and goaltending, I guess, take you in the playoffs in your mind?
I'd be surprised if they lost in the first round again, because it looks like they're going to be the first overall, team in the conference, which means they'll grab that second wild card, which, outside of Pittsburgh, who I still think could end up winning, third in the Metro, like you're going to be in pretty good position. All due respect to the Islanders, they again, like the Rangers fans had a real bone to pick with that article. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, with saying what the numbers tell you, which is that they are a very pedestrian, ordinary team at 5-on-5, and if there's pushback on that idea, show me the cup they played for, because it hasn't happened in the years that where this has been the case with the Rangers, where their 5-on-5 play has been average, and their special teams have carried them in the regular season. So, they do have a few lines that definitely outkick their coverage when it comes to 5-on-5 play, but they still have some fundamental issues down the lineup. And so when you see a game like we saw earlier this week, where the Islanders score three even strength goals, the Rangers get two power play goals, I mean, if that's the story in the playoffs, they're not going to last very long. And so that's the reality of the Rangers.
With that, obviously you alluded to that they might have the pick of the litter in a sense of playing one of those teams in the wild card. What have you just thought of that race? And it feels like they're just inching towards the finish line. Who are your favorites right now as we speak? I think you wrote a couple days ago that you had Detroit and Pittsburgh, but with all the games happening, I know that things change quickly. So where do you stand on
Yeah, I was
it
feeling
ended?
much better about that Detroit one at the time I wrote that than I did after the Capitals game this week. I think, clearly the Islanders getting that win over the Rangers, they got them again this weekend. Like they seem to have the inside track right now to a playoff spot. If I had to edit it, I would probably say Detroit, that Pittsburgh and the Islanders make it, and Detroit and the Capitals don't. But like you said, it changes day to day. I mean, I did not expect the Red Wings to lose to the Capitals. They seem like a team that really kind of turned their situation around, much like I didn't expect the Islanders to beat the Rangers, because the Islanders, three of their last four wins have come against some of the absolute doormats in this league. So it's all bets are off. But I mean, if I was going to play the percentages right now, I'd have to say the Islanders and Penguins are probably the two that make the cut.
It feels like just as a I don't know if you vote on the awards, but I'd imagine you
I
do.
do.
I'd imagine you do. But have you ever had a heart race like this with three guys, maybe even four guys, if Matthews gets to 70 goals, that could all have very legitimate cases at being the heart winner? Like, where do you stand on your own vote, and what's your thought process and going into voting eventually?
Right now, my vote goes to Kucherov. I just think that the heavy lifting that he's done to get that team into the playoffs is remarkable. Vasilevskiy not being himself all year and missing time, Sergachev getting hurt, the supporting cast for that team being a shell of what it used to be, and the distance between him and his next highest scorer on that roster. I think at one point I made the joke that like if the distance between Kucherov and Braden Point was a player, it'd be Mangiapane. Like that's how many points this guy had in between himself and the next highest scorer on the team. He's a tremendously good player, and I think that his accomplishments this year are as good or better than MacKinnon, and as good or better than McDavid.
And with that, with Matthews potentially getting 70 goals and Connor McDavid potentially getting 100 assists if he plays a couple games down the stretch, will be the first time in a long time that we've seen those markers. In your mind, what is a tougher, like, what's a more remarkable achievement? 70 goals or 100 assists?
It's weird because the argument for 100 assists is the rarity of it, in the sense that so few players have done it, and the fact that it hasn't been done since 1991. But it kind of loses a little bit of the rarity luster when two guys might do it in the same season. You know what I mean? I mean, it could be anomalous, but at the same time, if Kucherov and McDavid both hit that number, then it's like not as special for McDavid to have hit it. Because otherwise, I'd say 100 assists, to be honest with you. Like, I think 70 goals is a hell of an accomplishment. I'm frankly shocked that Ovi never got there. But he, it's funny, his era, you could probably say, is a bit more defensive than the era that Matthews is playing in. But to get to 100 assists and add your name to a list that involves what, three guys, Gretzky, Lemieux, and Orr, I think. It's just it's an insane accomplishment to see in 2024.
Do you think there's any way Matthews could eclipse, pun intended, Alex Ovechkin in terms of goal scoring? Obviously,
Oh yeah,
Ovechkin's close. Yeah.
easily. Oh my God, he's on his way. I mean, I think his current pace outstrips that of Ovechkin at the same age. There's every chance he's going to have to like try to catch Ovechkin once Ovechkin catches Gretzky, and especially because of where the league is. I mean, you know, again, like if 70 goals is like an approachable norm for Austin Matthews, I mean that puts him in the conversation for potentially being the greatest of all time as far as goal scoring goes.
How close is he to being the greatest of all time in terms of American players in your mind?
Still,
Like,
he's still behind Kane.
yeah.
Still a little bit behind Kane, but I mean, as far as like his potential and skill set and everything, I mean, it's all there for him to eclipse Kane at some point.
As well, we have a hotly contested Calder race, which it doesn't feel like we always have in the NHL, with Brock Faber and Connor Bedard. Where do you land on that front, where obviously Bedard is the better player, at least he will be, I'd imagine, going forward. But Brock Faber has been amazing as a defenseman as well for the Wild. Where do you land on that, and how much do you take into account maybe the legacy of the award when you're voting?
I know there's a lot of people that have pointed out that Faber's stats after the first of the year haven't been all that stellar. But overall, they're really good. And you know, to play that amount of time as a rookie and be as effective as he's been is the kind of thing you can point to and say that this is remarkable and this is not normal and this is somebody who should get his flowers for being exceptional. I'm trying to. I'm wrestling with the concept of how good Bedard's been this year because honestly, like, if you go based off the expectations and the hype, I don't think he's hit those marks. But as many people who defend him point out, he's skating with like Jason Dickinson, like he's skating on a team that has been stripped down to the rivets in order for them to get Bedard in the draft. And so like, I'll have to meditate on this one a little bit more before I can figure out who gets the Calder because I think both have a very compelling case.
Do you take into account age at all in terms of a factor?
I do. I mean I think what Bedard's doing at his age is certainly admirable. You take it all into account, the quality of team around him, the age, position, you know, expectation. I mean, like, think of it this way. I mean, as much as the age thing swings in Bedard's favor, how about the idea of one guy being tasked with playing defense while the other guy doesn't? Like, I mean, it's real easy when you're on a team with no expectation and you just can freewheel and put up as many points as you want without having to really worry about the defensive end of the ice. Not to say that Bedard can't play D. I've seen it, I've watched him a few times. He knows his way around the defensive zone, but he doesn't have the same level of responsibility as Faber does, for example, if we're gonna really start to like, you know, cut some onions here on what the difference between the two players is.
Greg, I'll admit that just watching all the Americans players coming out of the States and how good they are scares me a little bit for the
Now you're
Olympics
talking.
in 2 years. And I know you've talked about this a little bit, but with the Olympics and obviously the is it four nations? I won't believe I'll believe it when
Four
I
nations,
see it.
yeah.
How far away are we from the USA becoming the favorites going into every single best on best tournament going forward?
I mean, look at World Juniors. I mean, look at the progress that's been made there for the US. I've been saying forever that the moment the US gets more of its super talented young athletes playing hockey versus basketball or football or baseball is the moment it's done. It's done for Canada. You don't have the bench we have. And it's starting to happen because it's not necessarily starting to happen demographically. I mean, we obviously see who's playing hockey, right, versus who's playing other sports, but it's happening geographically where Austin Matthews comes from the desert, and you know the Hughes boys were you know born in Orlando, you know, and like you're starting to see more and more of that, and you know it's the seeds planted by years of expansion. It's just you know hockey gaining in popularity in certain corners of the U.S. And yeah, I mean, we're at the point now where if you look at the US roster, it's no longer a case where they feel like they have to, you know, bring in Ryan Callahan to play shot block and defense because they can't hang with Canada. Like we can hang with Canada. We could certainly get better goaltending in Canada, that's for sure. But it's still gonna be, you know, a matter. I talked to Mike Modano about this. The real key for the US is not whether they have the offensive weaponry to hang with Canada. It's whether those guys know how to play like the Canadians play, which is to play in their roles well enough. Because it's not a situation where every line on Team Canada is trying to do what Sid's line's doing. There are some lines that play shutdown. There are some lines that play energy. It just so happens that they're populated with all-star players. And so it comes down to whether Brady Tkachuk knows his role. You know, the Hughes boys know their role. Like it really does come down to whether there's a checking of egos and an understanding that in order to win as a hockey team, you can't play at the same level that you play in the NHL. You've got to play at a different level, different ice time, and know what we need from you.
I might sound naive, but why do you think there would be a difference for Canadian players compared to American players in terms of that role, assimilation or getting used to their rules rather than maybe for the States it being a bit harder?
It's simple. We've just never had enough of those guys. So like if you look back at the Olympic teams in years past, I mean like no one's telling Patrick Kane he needs to be a checking winger because he's one of the few guys that could score. Modano, Phil, Roenick, like Tkachuk, like all these Keith Tkachuk, all these guys, there were so few high-end players. I mean the third line center on Team Canada in most seasons could have been the first line center on Team USA. And so now the Americans are at a point where, you know, the center group for the US is going to be, you know, Austin Matthews, Jack Hughes, and Jack Eichel in theory. It's insane, right? So like we've never had that. And so now that we do have that, you have to go to probably Jack Eichel and say, hey man, you know, you get X number of minutes with Vegas, those minutes are going to Austin Matthews here, and you're going to have to learn how to play a different role in order for us to win a gold medal. And that's what's going to have to happen.
I'm still going to be hard pressed to see you guys defend Bedard, MacKinnon, and McDavid. I just want to throw that out a little bit, Greg. Just
Where's Sid? You think McKinnon's not playing with Sid? You don't
oh,
think
that's
he's going
true.
to call dibs?
I know they're
Yeah,
besties. I know they're besties.
I think he probably called dibs on that at some point.
That's true. That's true. I cover the Senators now, and I just want to hear your take on the. This team from the like as an outsider and following the league, but not right in. What do you make of the team, the craziness, the drama? Just what have
Yeah.
you thought about this team?
I felt real bad for the players. I felt like, you know, first of all, the goaltending that a lot of us thought was going to be of a really high quality this year because of how good Forsberg had been in the past kind of fell apart. And what was supposed to be the foundation on which they were going to build everything wasn't there. And then I felt bad for the players because of all the off-ice stuff with Dorian and everything falling apart and the Pinto situation. It just was one thing on top of another for that franchise this year. And I'm intrigued to see in what direction they go. I mean, you know, they clearly have their GM after that exhaustive search in which he found himself. And now they have to figure out the coach and we'll see where they go from there. But you know, there's a lot of talent there. I don't think it's necessarily time to start selling it off. But there's something off on that mix, and they're gonna have to figure out how to remedy it.
Yeah, it's going to be a crazy off season here in Ottawa. A lot of moving parts, I'd imagine. With that, to go a little bit Canadian for you, just in your mind, heading into the playoffs, who's the best team in Canada out of the Leafs, Canucks, Oilers, and Jets?
I'll go Oilers. I think the Oilers are a bit better than the Leafs. I know the Leafs have been super hot lately, and maybe this is the year, who knows? But I mean, when the Oilers are playing their game, they really, really lock it down defensively more than people give them credit for. And they get better goaltending than people give them credit for. And you know, Connor and Leon, we have seen them drag different incarnations of this team through series in a way that we've not seen Matthews and Marner do the same. And so I think I have to defer to the Oilers based on all that criteria, with the acknowledgement that the Jets are, you know, somebody asked me the other day about first round upsets. Like, I can't conceive of a situation in which the Colorado Avalanche lose in the first round in consecutive seasons, but the Jets are getting a little scary at the right time. And I would not necessarily think that they're going to be anywhere near a pushover in a series against Colorado.
As a Winnipegger, you know, a lot of Winnipeggers in my family, I think they would disagree. They feel pretty scared about Colorado and not very confident.
Everyone should. I mean, McKinnon's on another level right now, but that when the Jets were playing at their best, and when they were playing that kind of defense earlier this year that had the analytics community being like, "Hey, dummies, this team's going to be leading the division at some point. You should better wake up." And lo and behold, they did. They could have beaten anybody. And you know, they're getting their offense back. Hellebuck's still Hellebuck. They're playing a little bit better defensively. Like they were really wandering the desert for about a month, and now they are kind of getting good at the right time. And it's something you have to pay attention to. I mean, sometimes it's just a matter of who's hitting their stride at the right time that makes you win a playoff series.
Exactly. And with that, the Leafs seem to be a little bit just curious. Do you believe in this core? Like, I know it sounds maybe silly, but where do you feel like where is this team at for you in terms of the prospects of them making a deep playoff run?
The thing that they I wish they could do, and they'll have the ability to do it after next season, I think, is to blink away Tavares's contract and then spend that money on a defenseman. Because the real deficiency on that team is not Matthews and Marner and Nylander. It's not having what Vegas has in Pietrangelo and Theodore. It's not having what Tampa had in Hedman and McDonough. It's not having that other guy beyond Morgan Rielly that you can throw out there and you know, be confident for 50 minutes of a 60-minute game that your defensemen are great. And you know, no disrespect to Giordano and some of the other guys they have back there, but like they don't have that guy. And you need to the only way you can get that guy is to sign him or trade for him. And you can't afford it if you're committing that kind of money to John Tavares at that point. So again, in the world of do-overs, that'd be the do-over that I wish the Leafs could have, is to allocate that money somewhere else, and specifically at the blue line.
Can and we will. Before I let you go, I know you alluded to Carolina and Dallas being your, you know, favorites to maybe make the Stanley Cup Finals. As we sit here today, is that your Stanley Cup final prediction? Who do you have winning the cup this year?
I still, I mean, I'm gonna, I make a prediction before the season. As long as both teams are still alive, I stick with it, because if it happens, I look like a genius. And it was Edmonton and Toronto before the season. Not something my network is necessarily thrilled about, with two Canadian teams in the final, but I've long said that, like, I think an American audience would tune in for the Leafs. I think, you know, selling an American audience on "It's the Chicago Cubs, but everybody hates them" is like a real compelling narrative. And I think that they'll if it's McDavid on the other side of the bracket, like the best player in the world trying to prevent a team from winning their first cup since, like,
1967.
yeah, like what, the Nixon administration or something, like I think you could probably sell that pretty good to an audience.
Well, you know, I think Matthews is a pretty big star in the States these days, and rightfully so. So I think it'd sell. I don't feel very confident about your your prediction, Greg, but you know.
I don't either, but I mean, you know, I picked the Oilers to win the cup 2 years in a row. Blind squirrel nut. I mean, it's got to happen at some point.
That I know Oilers fans always say they've lost to the eventual champion the last 2 years. So there you go. There you
I
go in the
mean, you know,
playoffs.
some franchises would hang a banner for that. So I
Maybe
appreciate their
the Leafs would, I think.
yeah, or Nashville, I think specifically, they'll put
Exactly.
banners. But yeah, I'll stick with my pick.
Before I let you go, and thanks so much for doing this, Greg. Anything you want to plug for ESPN coming up?
Yeah, no. Yeah, I mean, you can read all my work at ESPN.com. I appear on a couple of their TV shows, The Point and ESPN Bet Live. I have a podcast called The Drop with Arturo Cal. It comes out every Tuesday and Friday. It's a lot of fun, super fun. Good interviews, good energy. I think people would, if you haven't listened to it, please check it out. And then I do a lot of non-hockey stuff on the Puck Soup Patreon for the old Puck Soup podcast that I used to appear on and cannot anymore. But I do a number of podcasts, including one called Mise en Pod, which covers every episode of Top Chef,
There you
US. I should say US, because I know you
How
guys
good
have.
of a chef are you? That's the question.
I'm pretty good. The difference between me and my wife is that she is someone who can like taste something and know to add something, and I am a very stringent recipe follower. But I see it through. I make some good food.
There we go. Well, I need you to, whenever the Leafs Oilers make the cup final, you need to wear a chef's hat on the point or or the drop or something like that. That's what I'm asking for.
Hey, listen, I don't spare for gloating if I get something right,
Okay.
says the guy who picked Nashville to make the playoffs.
There you go. There you go. Thanks so much, Greg, for taking the time, and I'll definitely be checking out all your stuff as I have all season. Thank you.
Awesome. Anytime. Thanks.